In this section, we're going to take a look at just some of the basic probability concepts, and specifically we'll cover some more terminology, unfortunately, but also some of the basic concepts that underlie these terms. Now, probability has its roots back with gambling, and I think it was in the French monarch's court that they played games of chance, whether it was dice or cards or various devices like that for entertainment. And a few folks engaged with mathematicians of the time and worked out, had the mathematicians help them figure out the odds, have them figure out when to hold and when to bet and what was a good deal and what was not a chance worth taking. And out of that grew the field of statistics, and a handful of those mathematicians went on to do all kinds of great things in our world, but the probability parts became a discipline on itself. Now, obviously, it's connected to reliability because we're dealing with failure rates, and that's the probability per unit time that something fails. And we use it in so many different places that having a foundational understanding of probability is going to be key to doing the rest of our job as reliability professionals. Now, probability is an event. It's the chance that something occurs. So the easiest one is a coin, a fair coin. It has heads and tails, and if it's tossed or flipped and it lands and we read the whatever is facing up, it has a 50% chance, a 50-50 chance of landing on either heads or tails, indicating one side or the other. Now, the values of probability lie between 0, it doesn't happen at all, or 1, it's 100% probable of happening. So if we have a coin that has two heads on it, and we flip it, it will always be heads. It essentially only has one side, so the chance of rolling a heads is 100%, and the chance of rolling tossing an unfair coin like that, and there's no tails on it, then it has a 0% chance of getting that. If it's fair, then it's 0.5 and 0.5, or 50% each. Now, let's look at a set of dice, or a single die, a six-sided die. The chance that it rolls a 1, if it's fair, is 1 divided by 6. It's got a 1 in 6 chance of that occurring on a roll. And that 1 over 6 is between 0 and 1. If you add up all 6 different probabilities, it equals 1. So those are some basic elements of what probabilities are. It's basically well-defined, and it's a value between 0 and 1. We often use percentages to discuss them, but it's really just a number, a probability or a chance of occurring. So it could be expressed as a decimal or a fraction or as a percentage. So if I have a sample space, it's like that six-sided die, that it has 6 different ways it could land, and it's going to be in one of those 6 ways, and that's what we would call the sample space. It's those 6 possibilities. Now, some things have way more, much larger sample space and many, many options. So think of a lottery or a game of chance that has, say, pick 6 numbers or pick 5 numbers. The chance that you would have the right sequence is 1 in millions. And a very large number. And so the sample space in that case is very, very large. And sometimes that's tricky to define exactly what your sample space is. But it is one of the elements of when we're talking about probability. All right, let's go into some of the basic terms and then we'll build into some concepts. So if I have 2 sets of events, and let me get my pen out here and see if I can get it working. So if I have 2 events, or sets of events, the E's on here are events. So I just circled a group or a set of events 1, 2, and 3, and we'll label that A. And let's see if I can change my color, get a different color. And I defined this group of events, 1, 2, and 5, is group B, or set B. And I'm interested in what happens with the probability of set A or B occurring. I want to define that entire area. So let me see if I can get another color that'll show up here. If I'm interested in the combined probability of these two sets occurring, in the what's the chance of those events within the mix of those two occurring, then that's a union where I'm pushing them together. Now, we typically just add sets, but if I do that, I end up double adding this area. I add it with set A and I add it with set B. So we'll talk about the addition rule a little bit later, but you can see how that occurs. But we basically say it's in set A or B, and that's a union, and the key word is or. Now, I get it confused with and all too often, so if I misspeak, please let me know. So another term that is pretty common with this concept of combining or mixing different sets of events is an intersection. And so once again, let's go with set A being in green, set B in red, and I'm interested in the intersection is where it happens in A and B. So events E1 and E2 occur in both events, or both sets. So they occur in both A and in B. And that's the key word here, is and. And in the intersection. And we use this upside down U looking shape to be an intersection. So A intersection B. And the previous one, I forgot to mention the term, is this device is a kind of a funky looking U, which is convenient because union starts with U, but it's A or B is the way that's read. So another quick term is complement. So remember, the sample space contains all of the possibilities that we're talking about in this particular situation or events. So if I've got a probability of, say, 25% to some event occurring, and that might be just it's only a quarter of the sample space. So by the notion of the complement, I know what's the probability of the remainder of the sample space. It's 1 minus that. The sample space is defined as equal to 1. So the probability of 1 minus P1 being the area outside of P1, the area we know, would be 0.75. All right, so the complement is that it's in either one side, this area that we're defining as P1, or it's on the other side of the sample space. And this gets in handy in all kinds of different things. And one that comes to mind for me is in dealing with the binomial distribution. It's really difficult to calculate the probability of 5 or more events, but I certainly can calculate the calculation of a binomial for 1 to 4 events. Doing 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4 is a whole lot more convenient than doing 5 out to infinity or to the full size of the sample space. So, but that's using that notion of complement, in that there's a probability of 4 or less, and there's a complementary probability of 5 or more, because overall it has to equal to 1. And so it's pretty handy in simplifying calculations in a number of different areas. Another term is conditional, and we often think of Bayesian statistics. Now, I have full disclosure here, I was trained as a statistician in the frequentist set of models, and I'm only roughly familiar with the Bayesian approaches, but it's when one of those situations where we have some information that will change effectively change the sample space we're dealing with, is one way to think of it. So let's take a look at the sample space of the weather, and we're interested in whether it's going to rain or not. So let's say we live in a rainy part of the world where there's a 25% any given day that it's going to rain. And we've also sorted out that it's either sunny or it's cloudy. And we're going to make the assumption that it only rains when it's cloudy. So it's sunny about 65% of the time, and it's cloudy, we'll use that as the space B or the group B, is about 35% of the time. And between the two of those, they equal one. So it's either cloudy or sunny. Now, we're making the assumption that it only rains when it's cloudy. And so if I look out the window and you see that it's sunny, I have a zero probability that it's going to be sunny and raining. So I'm going to use that prior knowledge of what's the state of the sky in order to adjust the sample space. So in that scenario, if I look outside and it's sunny, it doesn't contain any possibility of events for A, which is for raining. Likewise, if I look out and it's cloudy, I have a different calculation than for if it's going to be raining or not, because now my sample space is much smaller. So it would be the probability of A with the intersection of B, which is the 0.25 or 25%, divided by the probability of B, which is 0.35, which is much different than just the 0.25 overall without knowing the state of the sky. It's going to be much higher. So it's A way, I should do the calculation here, it's about 0.714. Make my 7 there, and that's 0.714 intersection B, which A is completely contained inside of the cloudy set. So it's just the probability of A in this case, 0.25, divided by the probability of B, which is this larger set that fully contains A, but sometimes it's cloudy and it doesn't rain. So it's 0.35. And so it's a much higher value than without knowing the condition of the sky, then it's just 0.25 chance of rain. So by using the condition of the sky, I can find out that if it's sunny, it's equal to zero chance. If it's cloudy, it's equal to about a 70% chance. So it gives us information which we can use to change the probabilities, and we call it conditional probability. Another simple term is mutually exclusive. It's like the complement, but it can have more than two groups that we're interested in. So I could have, say, three different colors of marbles within a bin. And if, let's say, the blue ones are at 25% of the quantity are blue marbles, and then I have about 35% that are green, well, how many red do I have? Well, using that concept of complement, the total value is one. I already know that about 60% are either blue or green, so that leaves us with the 40% are going to be red. But that's using the concept of mutually exclusive, where it's either blue or it's red or it's green, and there's no other possibilities, and the concept of a complement, where the total area has to equal one, or the total sample space equals one. So it doesn't work when when you have overlapping groups. So if the items in my bin can be classified in different ways, say their color or their weight. And so I could have a red heavy device or a blue light device, or vice versa, the blue light device. And so in a Venn diagram, they would be overlapping. And sometimes the color or their weight could mix and match and change and so on. So I end up with things that are not mutually exclusive. So in defining your groups, if I'm looking at just color and each item is only one color, then I can use this concept of mutually exclusive. But if the groups that I'm dealing with are a mixture of different things and they can overlap in which group they're in, then I am not using the mutually exclusive concept. One other term we want to consider when we're dealing with probability is independent or independence. We often make the assumption that two items are acting independently, or that the behavior of stresses apply to the probability of failure with some level of independence, or that they act independently. In notation-wise, what that means is that if I've got two different events, A and B, and I want to calculate the probability of those occurring as an intersection, as both occurring, it's really just the probability of A times the probability of B. The second equation here, let me get my, I think I have my pen working, is the probability of A given the probability of B. And since B and A are independent, it really doesn't matter what B is doing, or whether it's occurred or not, or what's its occurrence, chance of occurrence, or what's its state. We just really don't care, because it has no influence or effect on the probability of A. And so we end up with just the probability of A again. So think of a six-sided dice. And if I want to know what's the probability of rolling, say, a 2, then a 3, then a 4. Well, and let's say this is a sequence that we're looking for, and we want to understand the probability of that occurring. Well, the probability of rolling a 2 is 1 over 6. The probability of rolling a 3 is also 1 over 6, assuming a fair die, and 1 over 6, again, for the 4. Now, the probability of rolling a 2, 3, and 4 is just the multiplication of those, because each die roll is independent of the next roll. Just because I rolled a 2 on the first one doesn't really imply anything about rolling a 3 on the next one, and so on. And so I'll end up with 1 over, I think it's 216, if I remember correctly. And this is also called the product rule or the series rule. And so one place we really use this is in tallying up the reliability of a series system. We assume the failure rate of, say, the power supply is independent of the hard drive. And so we can multiply the probability of success, or the reliability of the hard drive, times the reliability of the power supply. And it's the same basic idea as just rolling a die. Now, in some cases, this may not be true, and then the math gets a little bit more complicated. But that's what this term independent is all about. It's something that's taught so often, and we need to find real applications for it in order to master this material. So if you've been working as a reliability professional for a while, some of these concepts and terms are either stuff you're very familiar with, or it's something you can see application for. So it's one of the great ways to learn this stuff is just go practice it. Go use this material. Go use the rules of statistics and probability in order to do your job. Next, we'll talk about some of the a little bit more about probability, a couple of laws, dealing with counting. How do we group and bundle and put together different sets of events.